Perek Chavav, chapter 26, sentence 17. And I think we have a chance of wrapping up the chapter this week. We'll see. I'm not going to rush us. But I think we can get there. You will recall that we began chapter 26 after this whole story with Naval, and you know that's done. David moves back up north to the area of Hebron. The people of Ziph tell Shaul that David is there. Shaul comes in with 3,000 choice warriors, and David takes the initiative, unlike chapter 24 where they ended up face to face. David takes the initiative to go into Shaul's camp. Everybody is sleeping. We said that this is something that Hashem arranges. It's Tardemat Hashem, God's sleep that he has put upon them. Abishai, brother of General Yoav, who hasn't been seen yet. We've just seen Abishai. But Abishai says to David, this is clearly an opportunity from God. Let me kill him, and then you'll be king. And David says, absolutely not. How dare you? God forbid. I would never send my hand against the anointed one of God. Take his spear, take his water pitcher instead. And then David, of course, takes it himself. We suggested that either Abishai refused the order, or David doesn't trust Abishai to do it. He's afraid Abishai, right there next to Shaul, will just take it into his own hands, something that would certainly fit the methods of his brother Yoav. They get out unnoticed, and then you get to the part that we're in right now, where David calls out to Avner, and he says, hey Avner, halo sa'aneh, won't you answer? And we gave different explanations for what he's saying. Right now, I'll just quote Radak, who says that David calls Avner multiple times, and nobody answers. And then finally he calls, and Avner says to him, sentence 14, who dares call to the king? And of course, David wasn't calling to the king. David was calling to Avner. So Radak said he means, the king is sleeping here. How dare you wake him up? Malbim says that Avner assumes the call actually is for the king, and it's just a respectful way to call for the king by saying, Avner, won't you answer me, as opposed to saying, Shaul, won't you answer me? David makes fun of Avner in sentences 15 and 16. He says, ooh, you're a mighty warrior. Who's like you in Israel? Tell me, why didn't you guard your master, the king? Some guy just came in to kill him. That's no good. Where's your responsibility for the anointed one of God? And if you don't believe me, look, take a look here. This is the king's spear. This is the king's water bottle that was by his head. And we have already noted that David is as the Medrash reads it, mocking Avner, because after the incident with Shaul's tunic in chapter 24, somebody convinces Shaul, and the Medrash thinks it's Avner, that David is in fact out to harm him, and that David did not have him at his mercy. David found the corner of the cloak on a thorn bush and claimed that he had done it. So David says, no, where's the spear and where's the water bottle, huh? Why do I have them? And then in Pasuk Yud Zayin, in sentence 17, the last thing that we read, Shaul recognizes David. Avner did not recognize David, or did not let on that he recognized David. In sentence 14, Avner said, "Mi ata karasa el hamelech? Who are you? Who's called to the king?" Not so Shaul. Vayaker Shaul es kol David. Shaul recognized David's voice. Vayomer, and he said, Hakolcha zeb beni David. Is that your voice, my son David? And we noted that that's what he also said in chapter 24. He called him my son. This is the way he refers to David. Of course, David technically is. He's his son-in-law. But it's clearly here more than that. It's a term of affection. And he says, and David responds, Koli, yes, it's my voice, Adoni HaMelech. My master, the king, yes, it is me. And then he beseeches Shaul, and that's where we start. Are we clear on where we've been? Okay. Sentence 18. Vayomer, David said, Lama ze Adoni rodef acharei avdo. Notice again this approach of calling himself Shaul's servant, right? Number one, it's the way he looks at the monarchy. And number two, perhaps from a psychological perspective, he's approaching him from a one-down position. to hopefully set Shaul at ease. So he says, why is my master pursuing his servant? Ki mea sisi, what did I do? Ma biyadi ra'a, what bad thing have I done? What have I done wrong? Ve'ata, and now, yishma na adoni ha-melech. Let my master the king please hear. Eis divrei avdo, the words of again his eved. Im Hashem hesischa vi yorach mincha. If Hashem incited you against me, a mesis in halacha, mesis is somebody who persuades somebody else to do something wrong, and usually we invoke it in terms of avodah zarah, in terms of idolatry. The mesit is somebody who persuades somebody else to worship idols. So if Hashem has incited you against me, meaning if God is angry at me, and the reason now that you're attacking me is because God has sent you to attack me, Yarach mincha, he will accept a karban. He'll accept my karban. Yarach, like reach michalach, right? That we say with karbanot, a pleasing aroma. Not that Hashem smells anything, nor is Hashem, you know, having an appetite for the karban, but it means it will be pleasing before God. I can bring an offering and it'll please God. And actually, I'll pause there because the next part of the sentence requires a lot of discussion. But in terms of this statement of I'll bring a karban, Malbim notes something interesting. He didn't say karban. He didn't say chatat. He didn't say olah. Any of the words that I would associate with a sacrifice. He used the word mincha. Mincha often means gift outside of a sacrificial context. However, here it does not, because he talks about God accepting it with this word reach. That's a sacrifice word. So why did he pick mincha instead of karban? So take a look on your sheet at source number one. Malbim offers a very interesting suggestion. Mincha is usually used when we talk about sacrifices. We talk about it to refer to a grain offering or to libations, wine and oil that are brought alongside a sacrifice. That's usually the way that we use the word mincha. So he says here, ha-mincha nilvet tamidim ha-korban v'tafel elav. He says the mincha comes along with the karban, and it is subsidiary to it. The karban is the animal sacrifice, and then the mincha is a grain offering, or oil or wine that are kind of come with the karban. The truth is there is such a thing as a standalone mincha. You could have a standalone flour, grain offering. But that's not the way Malbim is looking at it. He says it comes along with the karban. Veratzelomar, es ha'olah kvar ha'eleisi l'ratzon. I already brought an olah, a burnt offering to God for God's desire. Now I'm bringing the mincha with the ola. He quotes you a pasuk, ola u'mincha. Fine. What does this mean? He already sacrificed once to God, and now he's bringing another sacrifice. So Malbim says, "Rotzelomar shemashelo hargo b'pam harishon kishakaras knaf mi'ilo yichashev kikorban habalirtzos." He says, "I didn't kill you back in chapter 24." That was my sacrifice to God right there. That was my karban. That was my offering. God apparently is still not happy with me. Mashlo hargo atashenis, so the fact that he doesn't kill Shaul the second time, yechashev kimincha hanilvel akarban. That's like the mincha that goes with the karban. V'techashev li litztaka, and that should be considered righteousness for me, and therefore God should finally let me off the hook. So he says to Shaul, I brought my karban, brought my mincha, God should have nothing against me. I don't think this is about God. Then who's it about? V'im, he continues, v'im b'nei ha'adam, if it's the people, arim heim lifnei Hashem, they are accursed before God. Ki gershuni hayom mehistapeach benachalas Hashem, he chased me out today from joining myself to the portion of God. Le'mor, saying, Lech avod Elohim acherim, go worship the gods of others. What in the world are you talking about? Like, where did this come from? What does this mean? What does it have to do with anything? they chased me out of the portion of God saying, go worship others. I'm pretty sure we never saw Shaul say, go worship others. So they offer you a few different approaches. The first approach, the simplest approach, and the dominant approach, really, is that what it's saying is, you're chasing me out of the land of Israel. You're chasing me away from the Nachalas Hashem, the portion of God, the land of Israel. And now I have to go travel either among the idolaters or worshiping idols. We'll see what that can mean. But think about it. Already in chapter 21, he ran away to the Philistines. Right? To Achish, the king of the Philistines. In chapter 22, he went to Moab to protect his parents. In chapters 27 to 29, God willing, we'll get to them next year, he's going to go back to Achish and the Philistines. So the simple read of it is, you're chasing me out of the land of Israel. Abarbanel, though, is never happy with the simple read. Abarbanel has two very creative approaches. Take a look at source number two. No one else says this. That's not a disqualifier for Abarbanel. The Amar Zeh al Shaul ubeiso. He's talking about Shaul and his household. Shaya Nachalas Hashem Malchuso. That was the portion of God, his reign. In other words, David is saying, you chased me out of your house. That's one. Oh, Amar Zeh al Michal ubeiso. Maybe he said it about Michal and his own household. Ka'omra, when he quotes you a pasuk in Mishle, Proverbs, Bayis vahon nachalas avos umei Hashem isha maskales. He says, an insightful woman is from God. So Michal, being the insightful woman here, saving his life back in chapter 19, so she is from God. You chased me away from Michal? Michal is my portion from God, is my nachalas Hashem. That's the second read from Abarbanel. It's very nice to our Torah. They use that at a Shavah Brachos. Just skip the part about being chased out of the house. And then he goes on to give the standard approach that it's about the land of Israel. So those are two additional reads. And then one more, which is not meant literally. It's a drash. It's a medrash, the Sifri, on Parashas Ekev. He's commenting here on a warning that Moshe gives the Jews, be careful lest you separate from studying Torah. And in that context, the Medrash says, Omar Lahem, he said to them, be careful. He's lest the Yitzhahara lead you astray, you stop studying Torah. Shekevan sha'adam poresh min ha-Torah holech umedabek ba'avodah zarah. Person stops learning. They go and stick to Avodah Zarah instead. Shenamar, as the Pasuk says at the Golden Calf, Saru Maher min Aderach Asher Tzivistim Asu Lehem Egal Masecha. They strayed quickly from the path I instructed them, Hashem says to Moshe. They have made for themselves a molten calf. And then you get our Pasuk here, by David. And what David is saying, he's telling me to worship idols. Should David HaMelech obeyed Avodah Zarah? Would ever dawn on you to think that David worshipped idols? Of course not. Since he's on the run, he can't learn Torah at this point. He has no settled place. Since he can't learn Torah, there's a risk it's going to affect him. He would go and adhere to idolatry. So he's saying to Shaul, you have given me no rest, now I can't study Torah. It's like you're telling me to go worship idols. It's an interesting medrash. The medrash is doing what medrash does best, which is it's linking psukim together in order to come up with this. And it's trying to answer the question of how Shaul is telling David to worship Avodah Zarah. But the general read is undoubtedly what I brought you first. That this is about leaving the land of Israel. I wanted lehistapeach. Lehistapeach. Anyone know what that word means? It's an unusual word. Sorry, Janine, what?
Enough.
No, not lehistapeach.
Spread out like to
spread out.
Like
Sfich. Right. Sfich, right. Tzvichin in the Shemitah year are plants that grow wildly on their own. You didn't plant them, they're self-seeding plants. Sapachat is a term that we use for a sore of some kind that is attached to the skin. So, lihistapeach is to join on. Malbim says, I didn't want to have a big position of power, I just wanted to be a hanger-on in Israel, that's all I really wanted. And now you're chasing me out, and there's a classic Gemara in Ksuvos, in source number 4, which I'm glad we have Ora here today. This is yours. Tana Rabbanan, the Braisa says, La'olam idor adam be'eretz Yisrael. One should always live in Israel. Afilu be'ir shiruba ovdei kochavim. Even if you had to live in a city that was mostly idolatrous. Va'al yidor b'chutzala aretz va'afilu be'ir shiruba Yisrael. Don't live outside of Israel, even in a city that is mostly Jewish. Shekol adar be'eretz Yisrael domek mishiyesh lo eloka. Someone who lives in Israel is as though he has a god. You live outside of Israel, it's like you don't have a God. Shenamar, as the Pasuk says, Hashem says, I brought you here to give you the land of Canaan to be your God. So the Gemara says, wait, are you serious? You don't live in Israel, that's it? It's like you have no God? That can't be true. No, it's not saying that, don't worry. What it's saying is, it's just saying it's like you're an idolater. It's not that you don't have a god, you just have the wrong god. That's all we're saying. Now, there's a fascinating thing in Rashi here, on our pasuk. But what the Gemara is saying is that David is saying, you chased me out of Israel, you're telling me I should worship Avodah Zarah now. I should worship idols. There's this fascinating line that's brought in Rashi out of nowhere. I have never seen this elsewhere. Rashi on the Gemara does not say it. But in source number 5, he says, Hayotze me eretz Yisrael l'chutz la'aretz bizman habayis. Kilu obed avodas gilulim. He says, if you leave Israel for outside of Israel during the time of the temple. Now, David doesn't have a Beis HaMikdash. He has a Mishkan, though. So that's when it's like worshiping idols. Now, how is this like worshiping idols? In what way? So I think what it may mean is that Hashem relates to him like he is an idolater. You left? I'm not going to take care of you in the same way. I am not as attached to you. Similarly, we have a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. I brought it for you here on the sheet, but I think I'm going to say it outside. There's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, in which we are told that somebody who involves himself in Torah, but is not engaged in chesed, in kindness for others, is also kamisha ein lo eloka, as though he has no God. All you have is Torah, but you don't help others, then it's as though you're worshiping Avodah Zarah. It's as though you have no God. So on that, the Maharsha, Rabbi Shmuel Edels, in source number 7, explains, it doesn't mean he has no God at all, it means he has no God to save him. He has no God to take care of him. If you want to have chesed, if you want to have God's protection, you have to emulate God. God protects, you should be protecting also. You say, I don't want to take care of others? So God says, okay, well then why do you want me to take care of you? The idea is, and by bringing the Gemara in Avodah Zarah for, is to show the statement of Ein lo Eloka, he has no God, doesn't literally mean he has no God, he has no connection to God. It means Hashem says, I'm not interested in protecting you. So David is saying, you've sent me out of the portion of Hashem, telling me, go worship the gods of others, because God's not going to take, Hashem is not going to take care of me. I should go worship Avodah Zarah? That's the idea. Questions and comments? There's a gaping hole in what I just said. I was kind of surprised no one called me on it. Yeah, Chana.
The thing that you brought from Rabban Elifik, that it's chasing Mahal away from his wife, doesn't fit the end of the pasuk. So it's just...
Yeah, no, it's very difficult to read. It's difficult to read a Barbanel that way. I agree. I don't know why what motivates him except the pasuk in Mishlei is interesting to him. But I agree. Unless you're gonna say, if he no longer has his wife, He's like worshipping Avodah Zarah. I don't know. The reading of the Gemara, especially with the Maharsha, is a straight read. You're chasing me out of Hashem's portion. If I want to get protection now, I'm going to have to appeal to Avodah Zarah. That's the idea. Claudette.
What about the Jewish people that were exiled when they left? Did they think that God was not going with them?
So that's the idea, that they're now distanced from Hashem. That's one of the reasons why exile is so terrible and why we want to be back, is that this is a distancing from Hashem. The major flaw in this whole piece. When was David chased out of Eretz Yisrael? I gave you examples. When was David chased out of Eretz Yisrael?
He wasn't chased, he ran away.
Either way, he was chased. I mean, he was fleeing from Shaul.
For his own safety.
Where did he go?
He was with the Philistines.
The Philistines. Where are the Philistines? Where do the Philistines live?
West.
Yeah.
In Gaza?
Right, yeah. In Gaza, right? We've gone through the list of cities any number of times. Gat, Ashdod, Ashkelon, Ekron, right? Gaza. These are cities in Israel. What do you mean you were sent out of the land of Israel? Are we now, like, we're with the UN? Right? Gaza is no longer, Biden visited and that's it. Now Gaza isn't part of Israel? Like, what do you mean?
He's talking about not getting the opportunity to go to the Mishkan?
So that's a nice idea, but it's not, no one on the Pasuk actually explained it that way. You know, maybe you could refer to Moab, his thing that he did with Moab where he went to safeguard his parents there, and maybe it's the part of Moab that they really didn't take, because some parts of Moab, that's the whole controversy on Eber HaYarden, the land east of the Jordan, which parts we conquered, because we weren't supposed to fight with Moab, but Sichon conquered Moab, and then we conquered Sichon. But you could give that, you could maybe suggest that. But the answer really is that yes, the land of the Plishtim is not at this stage called Eretz Yisrael. You have to remember, the land that we were actually given was entitled the land of Canaan. The Canaanim lived along the Jordan. They didn't live, by and large, on the Mediterranean coast. That's why the Plishtim were able to get a foothold there. I'll demonstrate this for you. Take a look at source number 8. This is when Yitzchak plants things. Remember, Yitzchak went down to Gerar, the land of the Philistines, the Plishtim. He has a whole run-in with Abimelech. Doesn't work out so well. But there, we are told that he plants in that land, Vayimtza Ba'aretz Ahime Asharim, and in that place, he found 100-fold. Ba'aretz Ahi, in that land. What is the reference to that land? Says Rashi in source number 8. Af al pi she'ena chashuva ke'eretz Yisrael atzma ke'eretz shiva goyim. Even though it is not as great, not as important as the land of Israel itself, the land of the seven nations, the land of the Canaanim. Ramban seems to say the same thing. When Sarah dies, remember how the pasuk goes. Vatamas Sarah v'kiryas arba hi Chevron be'eretz Canaan. Right? Sarah died in Kiryas Arba. This is Chevron in Eretz Canaan. So look at Ramban in source number 9. V'tam, the reason it says, V'achrechin k'var Abram esra yishto el miras de Machpelah da-da-da hi Chevron be'eretz Canaan. Afterward, Abram buried his wife Sarah in the cave of the field of Machpelah. This is Chevron in the land of Canaan. Kishav leva'er hasadeh v'amakom v'ha'aretz. It went back to explain the field, the place, and the land. Ba'avor kichol ha'parsha hizkira b'nei ches ve'efron achiti. Because the entire portion mentioned the Hittites, and Ephron, the Chiti, the Hittite. Lefichach hizkir basov kihu be'eretz Canaan asher hi eretz Yisrael. Therefore, at the end, it went back and said, this is the land of Canaan, which is the land of Israel. So, v'chein amar b'tchilas ha'parsha, b'kiryas arba, hi chevron b'eretz Canaan, like I just mentioned to you. V'chol ze leva'er, ki atzadekes mesa b'eretz Yisrael, v'sham nikbara. Ki achitim imishpachos Canaan. This is all meant to teach you that the righteous woman, Sarah, died in the land of Israel and was buried there, for the Hittites were a Canaanite family. In other words, Abraham I should have noted, was in Be'er Sheva, down in Philistine territory, down in the Negev. She was not. She was in Hebron. She specifically wanted to die in the land of Israel. There's a lot of discussion about that, but that's the idea. Yes, this land of the Plishtim is outside of Eretz Yisrael. Claudette.
The time of David, Gaza was not a part of Israel. At what point it became?
That's where I'm going now. Thank you for the segue. The reason why the land of the Plishtim is not yet in Israel is because Abraham didn't travel there initially. Take a look at source number 10. Gemara Bava Basra, talking about how you acquire land. Halach vala orka ulrochva kana mekom hilucha. You want to know how to acquire land? It's not enough that there was some money that changed hands. Rabbi Eliezer says you have to walk the length and breadth of it. V'chachamim omrim ein hiluch mo'il klum. And the Chacham said it not just walking there. Ad sheyachazik. You actually have to take charge of it. You have to take control of it. And then the Gemara goes on to show Rabbi Eliezer says, no, it's walking there because that's what Avraham did. That's the idea. So what's going on here is that Canaan is the place where Avraham travels, and he lives there, and they accept him as a resident, right? They say to him, Nisi Elokim Atah Besocheinu, you are a prince of God in our midst, when he wants to get a place to bury Sarah. Avimelech never accepts Abraham in that way. Avimelech perpetually sees Abraham as a visitor. That's the way he describes him. You're a visitor. You're a ger among us. Only with Yitzchak does the region become any sort of part of the land of Israel. And that scene when he finally is able to dig a well and the Plishtim don't mess with it and so on. However, there is a sefer, I didn't bring it on here, called the Yeshua's Malko, on Shulchan Aruch, who argues that the land only gains its sanctity finally with David's wars. When David manages to beat the Plishtim, that's when this land actually becomes part of the land of Israel. That's the idea. Janine.
So, halakhically, throughout history, was produce from the land of Plishtim considered Shemitah produce?
So that is a huge question. There indeed have been those who have argued that there are areas, there are areas in the Negev that are in doubt because of the question of the boundaries in Parshas Maaseh. That's where we have doubts. I think we considered the produce in Aza always to be, because by the time, pre-David we don't know, we don't get references to it, but by after this time it's already considered to be part of Eretz Yisrael. Sorry, I was confusing two things. So David says, you're chasing me out of the land of Israel, you're trying to force me to turn to idolatry, to Avodah Zarah for protection. And then go back into the text, Pasuk Chaf, sentence 20, the conclusion of David's speech, Ve'ata, and now, Al yipol dami arza mineged p'nei Hashem. Don't let my blood fall to the ground, meaning I don't want to get killed, from before the face of God. Ki atza melech Yisrael levakesh es parosh echad. Because the king of Israel has gone out to pursue a parosh. Parosh is a louse. This is the same point David made. If you flip back chapter 24, sentence 14, he said, "Miata rodeh, who you're pursuing? Achrei kelev, mace, a dead dog, achrei parosh echad, after some louse." So David says here, I don't want to die because the king has decided to pursue some louse. And then he throws in four more words that are a little hard to render. Kashir yirdof ha-korei beharim. Like one who pursues a korei in the mountains. What exactly does that mean, the pursuer of the korei in the mountains? So I brought you a list of approaches on the sheet. I didn't want to spend a lot of time on it. Rashi here says, there's a Gemara in Chulin, page 140b, I referenced it on the sheet, which talks about a bird called the Kore bird, which chases other birds to sit on the eggs in their nests. Go figure. That's one view. So it's a bird. Kasher Yudov HaKore Beharim, like this bird, runs after things in the mountains. Radak agrees that it's a bird, but he says no. It's like somebody pursuing the Kore bird in the mountains. Abarbanel says that kings do this. This is a royal thing. You know, Abarbanel loves to talk about what the kings do. And then Malbim says, no, Kore isn't a bird. Kore is one who calls. Right? Someone who makes a lot of noise. Somebody who yells in the mountains. I put on the sheet, a yodeler. I don't know if there were yodelers in Malbim's world. But like you're, like somebody pursuing some random guy yelling in the mountains. The point, however you slice it, is, Shaul, this is so beneath you. A point, by the way, that Abigail made with David also in chapter 25. You know, pursuing Nabal is beneath you. So David said it in 24, and David says it again here. Clear? Yes, Hannah.
It's very interesting that Hakorei, when David says, Balechaki Karata, so it could be, I thought that it would fit to say, like somebody would chase the caller in the mountain, which is Shaul.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, I mean, he's not talking about Shaul pursuing. And he's saying, yeah, I guess that would fit with what Avner had said. It's a good point. So the thing that is odd in all of this, and that I want to come back to, is that Avner doesn't recognize David, right? Avner was David's military superior until now. Avner was the general of Shaul. They had some period of working together, not to mention, you know, the whole thing with Goliath, where Avner had a front row seat. Why doesn't he recognize David's voice? What would you say?
Are you talking about what we did last week?
I'm talking about where he said, yeah, when David called out and Abner said, what was the language? I mean, I said it again in the beginning this time. He said, Miata Karasa El Hamelech.
So are you,
is he pretending?
I saw it as a mocking question, not who are you to call the king rather than who are you?
Could be.
Yeah, it could be.
Could be. Definitely possible.
I also think that Avner would know him because of COVID, I think we really recognize people by their voices. It's a very strong recognition point. So if you hear somebody's voice, it's possible then. So like Janine says, who are you?
Right. Maybe. Definitely a possibility. I want to come back to it. Just continuing our comparisons with chapter 24 and contrasts. So I'm going to do this quickly because otherwise we'll run out of time. But number one, David again appeals to Shaul saying, I don't want to kill you. Number two, David says there are people who are trying to convince you that I am a threat. I am not any threat to you. Look, I spared you. Number three, the pursuing me is beneath you. Number four, we didn't get to this. Actually, we sort of got to it. We did sort of see it. Invoking Hashem to judge. Right? Let God smell my carbon. Let God smell my offering. On the other hand, two differences. In the previous story, he addressed Shaul directly. He came out of the cave behind Shaul. Here he addresses Avner. Number two, the text emphasizes here that David stands far away. In chapter 24, he didn't do that. Right outside the cave, he addressed Shaul. So two things just to keep in mind in that regard. Last notes on this section before we get to the conclusion of the chapter and some summary ideas. I had to at least point out source number 12. David said, if Hashem has persuaded you, incited you to attack me, Yarach Mincha, he will accept an offering. So Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says, you're accusing God. It's what it sounds like. You're accusing God of trying to persuade Shaul to attack you. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeDavid. Hashem says to David, Mesis Karasali. You call me a Mesis? You call me somebody who would persuade him to do wrong? I'm going to make you stumble in something which even the school children know. Something that you have no business making a mistake in. And it references a story that comes up much later on. It's a story in the end of Shmuel Beis, and it's also in Divrei Hayamim, where David, in a lack of confidence, there's a revolt against David led by someone named Sheva ben Bichri. And after that, David orders Yoav, his general, to do a census of the army. Who is with me? Who is going to support me? Which, you know, you're not supposed to do. And the pasuk there says, Vayases es David bahen. The word Vayases. A Satan arose upon Israel, meaning, in this case, a spirit that says to David, you don't have support, the people aren't behind you, and that leads him to say, let's go count our army and let's make sure that I have supporters. So the Gemara says, you accused God of persuading Shaul to attack you. Now, you're going to be persuaded to do something wrong. You know what's interesting, though, about this? I'm thinking as I read this Gemara. If I blame what Shaul is doing on Ruach Ra'ah, right, then it actually is Hashem who persuaded him. I don't know. I'm not sure what to make of that. It just occurs to me now. I don't know. Okay. We saw, also, a last note on this section. We saw an article from Megadim by Professor Ruth Wolfish back in chapter 17. We used it to talk about the structure of chapter 16 and 17 and what Shaul and Avner think of David and do they feel like David is a threat. She talks about how David here takes aspects of the role of Goliath in his taunting of Avner. And Avner not knowing who he is, but Shaul recognizing him. Right? Remember back in chapter 17, Shaul didn't know who David was and he asked Avner who he was. I think she's reaching a little bit. I don't think that the pieces add up the way that she wants it to. But I thought that she did make some interesting points about the lack of recognition as a theme in both and the taunting as something that shows up in both places. Claudette, you were going to say?
Is it possible that David is not so much saying to show that God is speaking to him, but he's saying, you are listening to other people about me?
No.
He wants indirectly to accuse Abner of telling Shaul things about him.
I don't know. I wouldn't really see it that way. I hear you, but I wouldn't really see it that way. Yeah. Let's see what happens. We have 5 psukim left, 5 sentences. I think we can do this. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, sentence 21. Vayomer Shaul Chatasi. Shaul says, I sinned. He says, I made a mistake, I was wrong. Those of you with a memory will recall chapter 15 in the war with Amalek, where after Shmuel goes 3 rounds with Shaul trying to explain he did something wrong, Shaul says, Chatasi, I sinned. There he does it, and here he does it. Shuv bini David, he says, come back with me, my son David. Do you remember the sentence where he said Chatasi back in chapter 15? What are the words after that?
And then he blames the nation.
No. He blamed the nation before that. He says, Vayomer Shaul Ashmuel Chatasi ki avarti es b'Hashem v'es devarecha. I violated your nation's word, right? But he asks him, Vishuv imi. Come back with me. Just like here, he says, Shuv, Bini David, David, I want you to come back with me. That's what Shaul is asking for. And he says, Kilo Arachod, I'm not going to harm you anymore. Tachas Asher Yakranav Shibei Necha Yomazeh. In return for the fact that my soul was so important to you this day, you didn't kill me. Hine hiskalti, I was a fool. Va'eshgeh, and I made a mistake. Harbei me'od, very, very badly. This was a bad mistake. Two notes on this apology. First of all, I look at it and say, wow, it's an explicit apology. Professor Kiel adds that it's greater this time than with Amalek. Take a look at source number 14, please. Zo apam hashniya sheshaul modeh shechata. This is the second time Shaul admits that he sinned. Aval sham hayazeh beino levein Shmuel. The first time round, it was just Shmuel talking with Shaul. There was no witness to the conversation. That's actually not 100% true. Because there is, when he says, Vayomer lo daber, when Shmuel says to Shaul, may I speak? And Shaul says, speak. It says Vayomer, and there's a vav after the word Vayomer, like Vayomru. And one of the commentators, I think it's Radak, says that Shaul did have like the head of his army or something present. He had people present. But here, it's very clear, it's in front of everybody. Because here, he's calling out across the gap between Shaul's army and where David is standing. So here, it's very clear that it's a public thing. Milukan hoda befarhesia. So that makes this an even better one. Not only that, Rabbeinu Yonah of Gerona, in the Shari Tshuva, says something interesting regarding apologies. Source number 15, Hebrews at the bottom of one side, English at the top of the next side. Im chata ha'eved la'adonav, ubalihi kana lefanav. If a slave sins to his master and then wants to humble himself before him, ein nafsho el ha'eved. The master is not going to desire the Eved, until he knows, he has to admit, the gravity of what he's done wrong. You better understand what she did wrong. And if the master thinks that the slave is taking it lightly, oh, is he going to be upset? So if someone sins, he had better understand the gravity of the sin and its punishment, and that's what Shaul says here. He says, "Hinei hiskalti, I was a fool, va'eshgeh, and I committed shogeg, I committed error, harbei me'od, a lot." That's the way that that Rabbeinu Yonah reads this. It's a complete apology. It's a valuable apology. Ralbag actually notes one more thing here. And that is, Shaul references being a fool and making a mistake. So Ralbag says both of those stem from the cave incident. I'm a fool because I saw how Hashem took care of you, and I made a mistake for not responding properly to your kindness to me. One level is God, and the other level is David. So Shaul says, I'm not going to do anything. I'm no longer going to harm you at all, so you should come back with me. That's his pitch. David is not buying it. Vayan David, Pasuk Chav Beis, sentence 22. Vayan David vayomer, hine chanis hamelech. David says, here's the king's spear. V'yavor achad mehanarim v'yikochel, let one of the youths come collect it. I'm not making you be the one to collect it, but send one of your youths, let a soldier come along and take the spear. You know, on the one hand, David shows, I don't want to harm Shaul, I'm even giving him a weapon. On the other hand, he shows a lack of trust by saying that Shaul should send a soldier for it, I'm not bringing it back. And the mixture makes sense, because think about Shaul's history. In chapter 19, Shaul actually swore to Yehonasan that he would not harm David. Remember, we made a big deal out of that because we said Shaul takes oaths very seriously. He was going to have Yonathan killed for breaking his national oath. So he swore. And then in chapter 24, Shaul expressed regret for coming after David. Neither time did it hold. And not only that, David is under no illusion about Avner. David believes Avner is the one who's keeping them apart. Avner is not going to change just because I showed him up here. The Ruach Ra'ah hasn't gone anywhere, right? And especially if Avner's reaction is, you know, David who? right? Whether he's making fun of him or whether he's serious doesn't make a difference. Avner has clearly not budged. So David says, I'm going to give him back the spear, but at a distance. That's his plan. And then he goes on. Sentence 23. Vashem yashiv la'isha tzidkaso ve'es emunaso. God should repay a person for his righteousness and his loyalty. The Professor Keel of the Dot Mikra says, my righteousness, because I didn't shed blood, and my loyalty to Shaul. The Asher nisancha Hashem hayom biyad. God put you in my hand today. V'lo avisi l'shlach yadi v'mashiach Hashem. I did not send my hand against the anointed one of God. V'hine, kasher gadla nafshecha hayom hazeh be'enai. As your life was so important today in my eyes, right, that I did not harm you, I would not take your life. Kein tigdal nafshi be'enai Hashem. So may my life be great in the eyes of God. V'yatzileni mikol tzara, and may God save me from all trouble. Here I note for you Abarbanel. He's very sharp. Source number 16. He says, Hispalel lifneho elokim l'shalem l'isha tzidkaso v'yaz emunaso. David prayed before God to repay a person for righteousness and faith. Rutzalomar, meaning, Yadati ki atalo tigmaleni kima'asai. I know you're not going to reward me, Shaul. I have no faith in you for rewarding me. Aval akel yisparachu yehagomel ha'amiti. That's okay. God takes care of reward. It won't be from you, it'll be from Hashem. That is good enough for me, says David. And then you get one more sentence here. Vayomer Shaul al David. Shaul says to David, Baruch ata bini David. You are blessed, my son, David. Gam aso sa'aseh, v'gam yachol tuchal. You shall do, and you shall succeed. David goes his way, Shaul goes his way. David is still on the run. Shaul is still going home. That's the upshot. David remains on the run. Here, Shaul says to David, more than just, you will be king, which is what he said in chapter 24. He says, you will succeed. So Shaul has transcended what he did in chapter 24. Number one, his apology is more explicit and even public. Number two, he asked David to return home with him, which he didn't ask in chapter 24. And number three, he tells David that not only will he be king, but he will be successful. That's something that that is added. Okay. Thoughts on that before I add a summary note. Yes, Ricky.
David doesn't go with him. He doesn't go back to Michal. I don't know what happens after.
No, David is going to be on the road. You'll be very surprised where he's going next. Although I did tell it to you just before.
Yeah, I started to read a little bit, and it doesn't look very promising for a bit.
No, it doesn't. Yep. Other questions and comments? Yeah, Janine.
So Shaul, I assume that he did continue to pursue. I don't know on that.
Okay, well, no, you have to read the book.
I didn't plan to do that, but no, I'm just saying he seems to have moments of clarity and then.
Yeah, and then problems. So
I guess it's I guess that's mental. That is mental illness.
It can be for sure. I mean, we are not going to find David and Shaul relate to each other in the rest of the book. This is their last encounter. There will be no more explicit pursuit, but David is going to be hiding. I'll tell you, he's going to be hiding with the Plishtim. I referenced it before. Chapters 27 to 29, David takes a very surprising turn, as we'll have to see. Sandra. You have to unmute.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
When Shaul says to David, "Aseita asher v'gam yachol tuchal," is he speaking the Ruach HaKodesh, or is this just a bracha that he's giving him?
So, unclear. In chapter 24, when he said, "You're going to be king," it wasn't obvious that that he was doing so with Ruach HaKodesh, it was possible that he knew already from the word being out that Shmuel had anointed David. The other thing I would say is that we've associated his Ruach Ra'ah with a lack of access to Hashem. He lost access to Hashem when David became king. Other than that blip at the end of chapter 19 when Shmuel makes him a Navi. So I think it would be difficult to say that this was, I think it would be difficult to say that this was, Ruach HaKodesh.
So this was basically just a bracha that he gave to,
I see it more as a bracha. Or he's genuinely confident. He says, look, Hashem's clearly on your side. That's another possibility.
Maybe an understanding. At that moment, he had the understanding of what
he was right.
I still want to go back to David not going back with Shaul. If he doesn't say anything, he just walks away. Is that a statement?
Yeah. I mean, that is a statement. The fact that he says, you send a soldier for the spear, tells you everything you need to know. But Shaul is accepting it. Shaul says, you're going to be successful. I wasn't successful. Right? I, as a king, was not successful. You will be king and you will be successful. So I wanted to make sure to highlight something here. David in this chapter, the changes from chapter 24. And what I'm going to say here is informed by an article by Rav Bazak, as well as one of my emailers, as well as just some thoughts of my own, all kind of blended together. At the start of this parak, at the start of the chapter, we ask whether there are differences between chapter 24, the first time around with Ziph, and chapter 26. And we noted that there are differences in David's situation and in David's conduct. Here, David initiates contact with Shaul. Chapter 24, he ran and hid. Here, David could have kept his hands clean and let Abishai kill Shaul, right? But David didn't do that. In the previous chapter, it would have been about him doing it. David takes something that he can return here, and he doesn't use his sword as he did in cutting the cloak, the tunic, in chapter 24. David here addresses Abner instead of addressing Shaul, and David stays far away. So here's what I see. Number one, David is actively working to defuse the hostility with Shaul. He initiates contact, and he targets Avner, the agent of the division. Number two, David is put to a greater test here with Abishai's offer, and he passes that. And this may be credited to the influence of Abigail. Abigail, who rebuked him in chapter 25 and said, hey, back off, right? That's Rav Bazak's suggestion as well as my emailer. That may be this is Abigail's influence. It's an assertion of David's Yaakov over David's Esav, effectively. And yet, David does not have a lot of faith in his success. Right? Maybe because Shaul replied to him here, not Avner. Maybe if Avner's response to David here had been, you're right, then things would have been different. But as long as Avner is playing the David who game, David is not feeling any confidence at all. That's what I see. Sorry, what, Ricky? You just muted yourself.
I said I don't get that.
What do you mean?
Why would he feel less confident because Avner?
Because Avner is the one who is setting Shaul against David.
So he has to influence him first before...
Yeah. Because Shaul has been talking a fine game. But Avner, remember, how did we figure out that Avner was the one driving this in the first place? It wasn't explicit. But we know that after Shaul dies, Avner is going to prop up Shaul's son, Ishbosheth, as the new king, instead of take people over to David. That we know. We know that back in chapter 17, Shaul asked, who is this youth? And Avner doesn't go find out. Avner doesn't answer, and he doesn't go find out. He goes to bring David instead. And we have Abner's general hostility that shows up versus Yoav in Shmuel Beis, where he starts his war game with him. And so on that basis, the Gemara was the one that said, yeah, this is actually Abner's doing. And it fits with the fact that he calls out Abner here. It fits with the fact that David said to Shaul in chapter 24, if a man says these things to you, somebody is saying things to you about me. I don't know if you can hear me. There's construction going on in the building. I hope I'm being loud enough. But yeah, I think that David sees Abner as the threat, and he is not, as long as Abner is not playing nice, David's not going anywhere near them.
Where was Doeg during all this?
Doeg has disappeared. No, that's the answer. Doeg has disappeared. Remember that when we finished chapter 22, we talked about the fate of Doeg and the punishments that are in store for Doeg. I may have referenced for you there is a view, it's a view anyway, that in the beginning of Shmuel Beis, when somebody comes to tell David that he killed Shaul, that Shaul died, that might be Doeg. But that's a very hard read. It's a late Medrash that says it, and it's a very hard read. The answer is that after no, there's no future for Doeg. That would seem to be the answer.
So he wouldn't have been part of Shaul's army.
Right. Right. No, I don't think so. Okay. Well, thank you very much, everyone. What I want to do in our next class, which will be, you know, God willing, it will be end of August or beginning of September, depending on when people are available. I'm going to have to send out an email. We'll start with review questions from this parak, because I didn't get to do them. And then we'll launch right into Chav Zayin. I think next year we should be able to finish Shmuel Aleph. That would be my goal, would be to do Chav Zayin to Lamed Aleph. We could wrap up Shmuel Aleph in a bow. That would be very nice. Granted that Shmuel Aleph isn't a book, it's just one Sefer Shmuel. Nonetheless, it's still a nice way to do it. So, although that would be really bad because it ends on such a down note. I don't know. I'll have to figure that out. We have time. Okay. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.